Okay, welcome one and all back to the Cinelux Hour. Michael Gaughan here.
And I'm Dennis Berger. Hello.
And we are, well, it's been kind of an important week or so for Cinelux because we've latched onto the theme that home theaters are now indisputably better than movie theaters and have really been running with that on the site. And it seems to have resonated with people. And that was the topic of our last podcast, but we had the opportunity to bring Theo Kalamarakis in to join the conversation. Given that Theo is widely acknowledged as the father of home theater, and people may not be aware that he has a amazing passion for movies and moving watching, which is what always informs his work, it would be remiss for us not to have a conversation with him.
Absolutely.
So that's why he is coming back. He was our featured guest on our very first episode, and he's returned to have that conversation with us today. But before we get to that, last week, Dennis wrote a post around the very, well, I would assume controversial topic that...
Very controversial.
Yeah, I mean, given that, I mean, here the topic was that streaming, poor pissed on streaming, you know, the video files whipping boy, streaming, even streaming, Amazon, Netflix, all those villains, can be better than a movie theater. And, you know, and I thought you laid out a pretty damn strong argument for it, but I thought, why don't you just sort of recapitulate here and, you know, see what we can say about it.
Yeah, you're very right that streaming is the whipping boy of video files. I run into this all of the time in the comment section of Home Theater Review. Anything positive said about streaming, any use of streaming when reviewing video components just gets dogpiled on, you know, oh, how dare you use streaming? And the fact is, I just have to wonder if these people have watched Netflix or Amazon or especially Vudu in the past 2 years, because streaming is getting so much better. I mean, here's the thing, you know, we're sort of used to these cadences of, you know, DVD comes out and then Blu-ray comes out and then UHD Blu-ray comes out. And we've got these sort of quantum leaps in quality, in compression, in things like that. I think what most people don't stop to think about is the streaming platforms are constantly evolving. They don't have to wait for a new hardware certification to introduce new compression and decompression codecs. You know, right now, Amazon is playing around with the new AV1, which is an open source codec, which is going to be, it's a little harder to compress on their end, but it achieves so much better video quality on the decoding end, and that's going to be amazing. But my point was, we have already reached the point to where Netflix and Amazon and Vudu can deliver a better experience than your movie theater. And I think it really all boils down to HDR. HDR via these formats is giving us a level of contrast and dynamic range that you just can't get at most movie theaters outside of like the Dolby Vision laser cinemas, right? But
that's one thing I wanted to point out is that your reasoning behind this pointed to things that I don't think a lot of people would consider when they're thinking of picture quality. They would think of it just in terms of resolution and vividness of color, but you were talking about some of the other things that influence how we perceive an image.
It really, our brains are evolved to focus on black levels, contrast and dynamic range. And the HDR via these formats is giving us a level of image pop that you just can't get at most cinemas. You know, I was watching Our Planet on Netflix over the weekend. There were honestly times where the image looked like 3D without glasses. Like you're looking into the image. And all of that boils down to contrast and dynamic range at black level. And that's simply it. So,
well, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm probably outrageously wrong about this, but the things you're talking about mainly have to do with black and white and not so much about color, right?
Right. It's the black point, it's the white point, and it's the number of steps in between, you know? And it's really mostly it. And yes, we do benefit and we do pick up on the enhanced color gamut of you know, the new 10-bit and 12-bit formats and things like that. Those we can see, we can perceive, and they are important, but really everything is so vastly outweighed by black level, you know, white level, dynamic range, the number of steps between them. That's really what, for the most part, our brain locks onto. Now, if you start throwing things like, you know, nasty compression blocking and artifacts and things like that, yeah, you're going to go, oh, God, that's awful. But we've gotten to the point with the codecs that the streaming services are using that you're really just not seeing those things.
Okay, so my question is this a case of the emperor's new clothes? I mean, when video files, assuming they're even looking at these services, when they're looking at them, what are they seeing? And why aren't they seeing what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think one, they're, it may be that a lot of them are just ignoring streaming, or maybe they're watching it on subpar devices. You know, I'm watching on a Roku Ultra, and I know that's delivering a pretty great experience. One of the things that I think a lot of people don't understand is that Netflix is not Netflix. It does matter which device you're watching on. The other thing is, you know, here's the thing. If you compare, you know, something on Netflix to the UHD Blu-ray, in many cases, if you're sitting there and A-ing, B-ing back and forth and switching inputs and here, will you notice differences? Yeah, in a lot of cases you will. Is that the way we really watch and consume things? It's not, in my opinion. And that's why I'm not saying that streaming is as good as it gets, although it is getting better all the time. I'm simply saying that streaming at this point delivers a better experience than most movie theaters in terms of visuals. And, you know, if that is the Rubicon that we're trying to cross, I think we've already crossed it. So,
right. And then I guess it has to come back to the point, Adrian Maxwell had a piece about why movie theaters still matter. And I thought that was an important case to make. But unless you're 10 years old, why do you want to go to a movie theater? What benefit is there anymore?
I got into this with a commenter the other day who said, well, you know, what you're missing is the oohs and ahs from the crowd and the applause and the laughter at the funny bits. And look, if those things are part of the movie watching experience for you, who am I to tell you you're wrong? But they're absolutely the worst part of going to the movies for me. Right. When I'm watching a film, I want to pretend that nobody else in the world exists. And so I'm not saying that's the right position, or I'm not saying it's the wrong position. I'm simply saying that, you know, whatever, that may be valid, but that's actually not an argument for me. But yeah. My argument, I'm keeping it to the AV experience. So,
yeah, the thing is, I don't want to go into a so-called communal setting just to watch them try to conjure up Pavlov's ghost.
No, you know,
there's no upside to that.
I don't know if I mentioned on the past episode. I can't remember. I don't pay attention to what I say. But, you know, I went to see Captain Marvel a few weeks ago, and there was one point in the film where, by the way, it was a packed theater, and for the most part, people behaved. But there was one point where someone said something on screen, and it reminded me of a personal in-joke between me and my friends. It was not something intended to be funny. It was just one of those things of, oh, you know, this person in my life would find that humorous. And I chuckled. And the person next to me started laughing. And that just destroyed me. I'm like, what are you laughing at? Like, why? That's not funny to you. You're laughing because I'm laughing. And I find that so annoying. But, you know, for some people, they don't. For some people, that's part of the magic. And it's valid. So,
yeah, I guess. I guess they should keep the doors open a little longer. We'll yeah. see. But anyways, I suspect Theo will have a more positive take on all this. So let's bring him in. And it's just good to be able to talk to Theo. He is one of the best people in the industry. Just a great person to talk to, a great personality. So let's jump into that conversation. We'll see everybody on the other side in just a moment. Okay, we are back from break, and we're being joined for the second time on the podcast. This is our first return guest. It's Theo Kalamarakis. And hi, Theo.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for joining us, Theo.
Thank you for being here.
Okay, we had to have you on because lately on the site, the subject has been how home theaters, we believe, have become better than movie theaters in terms of performance, variety, and access to content, and the overall experience. But
absolutely.
Okay, so you do agree with that on all those?
100%.
Okay, because, I mean, I know you got into this business because of your love of movies and movie watching, and, you know, you're still somebody who seeks out watching movies in theaters, right?
Yep. I tell you what happened. In the old days, I remember 20 years ago, when we get a VHS tape of something, we said, oh my God, this looks almost as good as in a theater. And of course, it wasn't even remotely close, but in our mind, to be able to bring home the kind of experience, encompassing experience of a theater with sound and music and environment was a big deal. Right now, we don't go to the theater because the performance in a lot of the auditoriums are substandard. I'm not talking about the big premiere venues like the ArcLight in Los Angeles or the Lincoln Square theaters here, but you get to the average multiplex and you don't get your money's worth. And what you see at home, 4K, Dolby Atmos, and in a better environment than in a miserable theater with stretched black fabric on the wall, is a lot more rewarding.
When do you think we crossed that Rubicon? When do you think the home theater experience became better than the average commercial cinema experience?
I think it's been happening slowly and gradually over the last 4 or 5 years, when the technology is improving, 4K was introduced, Dolby Atmos was introduced. And more importantly, I think what helped, you know, spread this awareness that the home theater is as good as the theater is that equipment prices dropped. I mean, God, you get an Epson projector now, a 4,000 Epson projector that's capable for 4K. I don't know if it's exactly enhanced 4K or regular. Dennis must know better if it is 4K enhanced or not. But you get a picture that I remember I had an incredible Ranco projector, and it didn't even get close. I still have it, actually. Close to the quality, the brightness is there, the picture definition, the ability to show HDR content. So you get slowly with the changes and advance in technology, home theater has caught up.
Well, this plays into one of your favorite themes, because on the last podcast, Andrew Robinson was talking about how this advances the democratization of technology and the entertainment experience. And I know that's important to you.
Dennis, how do you feel about it?
Well, I just wrote a piece for Cinelux that was actually spurned by a lot of conversations I've had with enthusiasts and a lot of pushback on my love of streaming, Vudu, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon. And I feel a lot of home theater enthusiasts are like, no, only discs and, you know, can... And I think, honestly, with streaming, with Netflix and Amazon and Vudu, We've passed the cinematic, we've passed the theatrical experience even with those.
Dennis, God bless you. You know, you're heretic to some of these esoteric people. You are absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Yes, you may not. I had this discussion yesterday with Dave Donald, who used to work for Kaleidoscape. And he said, I said, listen, I downloaded the movie. I downloaded Mary Poppins. And I downloaded it for the comparisons, both from Kaleidoscape and downloaded it also from Vudu. And I played on my TV. Yes, you see a picture, a difference in the picture. The blacks are blacker and everything. But if I didn't have that single title to compare and I would download a picture I've never seen on 4K, I would be as happy as a pig in mud. I would be enjoying it. And you know what Dave told me? He said, well, the picture is not, you're not going to get such, you know, difference in the picture. but you get a huge improvement in the sound quality. And I don't know how to compare that to where, I don't know how to take this. This is real or not. Do you think that streaming, in streaming sound suffers, but in actual Blu-ray doesn't?
I think it depends on the title. I think there are some titles that do sort of shine a spotlight on the enhanced information that you get with a full bandwidth Dolby True HD or DTS HD Master Audio. Sometimes it really comes down to the air, the space between the sounds, and the definition and detail in the very highest frequencies. But again, I think even what you're getting from Netflix these days on a properly calibrated home theater is better than sort of the compromised audio experience of most movie theaters. So,
and there is also something else, Alan, you said what you get from Netflix and what you get from Amazon, at least me, that have a more esoteric taste in movies, are movies that are never going to be able to see them on Blu-ray. Half of the foreign movies that are quality movies in festivals and everything come only on steel, on DVD. Mm-hmm. And in order to see them on Blu-ray, you have to buy them from Amazon. And yes, you pay $14, but $14 is a lot cheaper than paying $42 to get a London import. Yes. So to me, the streaming has changed the way I see home entertainment, because it gives us not only decent quality, but content that's not accessible in the market. Just like what it's the equivalent of what's happening in the theaters. If you see what's playing in the 4,000 screens in the US, 80% is crap. You're only going to get in Angelica or in the Film Forum in New York or some lines in California theaters, good quality entertainment. And with the streaming, you have it in your fingertips. The movies that make it to Netflix blow your mind.
Yeah.
And you're not talking about small productions. You're talking about filmmakers like the Coen brothers, filmmakers like Alfonso Cuarón. These movies are not even available to be seen in the theater after the initial 1 week return. They're not even available for video, for to buy them. Try to rent, to buy a Blu-ray copy of Roma. You won't find it.
Yeah, but even with mainstream titles, because John Siaka right. just reviewed Welcome to Marwen, and they decided not to release that as UHD Blu-ray because of its box office performance. So you're going to see stuff, you know, only on streaming in high resolution. It's not going to make it
best anymore. What? Stick to the style. I just downloaded it on Kaleidoscape, and I liked it. I mean, it was a flawed movie, but it was exciting. It was a nice concept, and yes, I can't buy it. I wish it would come out on 3D. Was it ever? Did it ever play in the theaters in 3D? It seems like a made for 3D movie.
I don't
movie,
think so, but I'm not sure.
I don't know because I hate 3D. But I'm not sure.
By the way, I just want to back up a second because, Dennis, I know you like Buster Scruggs a lot. And you were talking about the HDR presentation on that, and that couldn't have happened in a theater, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did a lot with the HDR in that film that I'm not sure they would have bothered to really go to that depth of exploring the contrasts and so forth if the cinema were intended to be the main vehicle of distribution for that film. You know, most movie theaters just can't do that level of dynamic range. So yeah, I think in a way they knew they were making it for the home. They knew they were making it for a platform that's really pushing 4K and HDR. And I think that opened them up to some creative decisions that they might not have made if the multiplex was where they were really aiming for.
When it comes to me that I like quirky programming, things that you won't find in the theaters except for 1 week at the Quad, I mean, the fact that we have such streaming abundance of content is outstanding. And we cannot but mouth it just because next to each other, streaming will not probably look always as good. But it doesn't look terrible. And that is what I want to... I want to make sure that at least the people that I talk to, I take the stigma that steaming has is not as, you know, overpowering as it was a few years ago, because it has improved. I don't know. It's the bandwidth has improved, or
the codecs, yeah. Mostly what they're using for compression has improved. You know,
yeah, Dennis, do you want to talk about your experience with Blue Planet 2? Because we're going to be doing some follow up on that, and I think that's enlightening given what Theo's talking about.
Yeah. I think most people who know me know I'm a David Attenborough fanatic, and Blue Planet 2, when it came on, you know, and aired in 4K on Dish Network, we recorded it and consumed it, and then it came out on Netflix. And I saw it, and it was like, oh my God, this is so much better than what we have on the DVR. This is just incredible, the detail of the dolphins jumping in the water. And then I think you asked me to review it on Kaleidoscape. Yeah. And I downloaded it from Kaleidoscape and wasn't expecting that drastic a difference. But man, I was blown away by their HDR grade for that, and just the vividness and the richness of the image. And it's almost like looking out a window, you know, an underwater window. But that was a pretty startling instance of just how much of a difference it can make. Unfortunately, and I don't quite know why, that was one of the rare titles that's not available in HDR on Netflix, and that could be a large part of the difference, because I as I've said in a recent post, you know, contrast and dynamic range are the things that our eyes and brains treat as most important when gauging picture quality. But yeah, that was one of those that was just a startling difference.
Okay, why don't we take a little break here, and we'll pick up the ball again on the other side. See you then. Theo, do you see any kind of steep downside with filmmakers now creating directly for the home market? And I'm talking about doing their best work for the home market and essentially bypassing theaters completely.
Steven Soderbergh, guys, all of his movies now are made for Netflix. The Coen brothers, Alfonso Cuarón, that's the home market. They're making the movies for home. And these are movies that win the Oscars and not the movies that are playing in the theaters. And let Spielberg, foam in the mouth that, oh my God, we're taking away the power of watching movies in the theater. Wake up, it's a new reality. You can't take the people always to go out and see a big movie in the theater. You have to do something different. What we do as different is we give them the opportunity to see it at home in a good home theater with good quality. You know, in the 50s, when TV came and the students start crying like Silver does now that, oh my God, we have to do something to get the theaters, the people to the theater because they're stuck on TV. The students react and did something else. They created CinemaScope, they created Cinerama, they introduced stereo sound to try to lure people back. Well, today we have, you know, good presentations at home. We have home theater, we have a great sound, Atmos, we have HDR, to keep the people happy. They're not going back to the theaters because it's gonna be a diminishing situation. There's always gonna be theaters for big presentations, big event movies, Transformers or what have you. People will wanna see it in the theater. But for the average movie, seeing it at home and watching it at home has become the staple of our home entertainment experience.
Yeah, but is that...
Just going to ask Theo, what does it take to get you into a commercial cinema? What draws you out to the movie theaters these days?
IMAX. I go to see an IMAX movie, and I will go and see a you're going to have to pay me my way in gold to see Transformers or Avengers or Captain Marvel. I wouldn't do it if you paid me. But I'm going to see the new Leon Carax movie, Climax. I want to go and see a great movie by Michael Haneke that plays at the Film Forum that I'm dying to see, because I know it's going to be an enlightening experience. And I don't want to wait for 6 months until the movie is distributed to video. That's the only time I would go. But I don't, unfortunately, I don't even go for that anymore because I don't want to get out of my way to watch it in a big room. Like, I almost tempted to go and see on IMAX a movie called Free Solo, which is now on Kaleidoscape. You've heard this movie about this crazy guy that climbs up El Capitan. Mm-hmm. You know this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't do it because I'm so afraid of heights, and I was afraid to see him fall and break his neck that I didn't do it. So sure enough, yesterday I was coming from LA and the woman next to me was watching it on TV and was like a magnet. I kept looking at the screen to see what I missed in the theater. But I would see a movie like that. I would see Dunkirk in IMAX because it's meant to see it on a big screen. I would watch, a great Disney cartoon. I saw Incredibles 2 in the theater.
Do you still go to BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music? You used to go all the time.
But again, I won't go to see a big movie. I'm going to see a new Andrew Bujalski movie or a new, esoteric director or an independent director, because it's nice. What the theater does to you that home theater doesn't do is watching movies with a crowd that appreciate it. Enjoying the silence, enjoying the clapping, you hear the joy that you don't get in the theater. And that's why I believe that theater, going to the movies, is never going to become obsolete. Enjoying movies in groups, it's almost atavistic. It's since the ancient times, we're watching theater, the old theater of Epidaurus. So that's not going to stop. You need to see a first-run movie the first day it opens with an appreciative audience. That cannot be duplicated in a home theater.
Is that economically sustainable, though? I mean, we've gotten to the point where you need to have a Star Wars or an Avengers, and then everything else flops. So how do you keep the doors open?
That's what's happening. That's why, BAM, you don't go to enjoy the crowd by watching the Avengers. You go and watch it with a movie that plays at the Angelica that week. And it's a small movie, and you just enjoy the movie for what it is. It's not for the special effects or anything.
Yeah.
Theo, you may be able to speak to this better than I can, and I'm sure I'm going to misrepresent the facts, but I read something the other day to the effect of 20 years ago, coming out of Sundance, maybe 10 of those films would have gotten some sort of distribution deal, where these days it's more likely to be, 150 or something, and purely because of Netflix and things like that. So,
and not in theaters, you mean in through Netflix?
I mean, through Netflix, yeah.
That's amazing. That is just such an incredible statistic.
Yeah.
It allows young directors to have a forum.
Well, I could be completely wrong about this. Has any of this change in the movie watching experience had an impact on your work with theaters over the years?
No influence on the design work, but I see people more and more moving away from home theater because integrators are not pushing it. There is a very limited knowledge of how to do a home theater, and integrators take the easy road. And they just put TVs on the walls, and they don't make money, and nobody benefits from that, including the consumer. So if that, there is a decline in home theater, to me, is a matter of educating integrators that they can do it and do it profitably. But there is no product out there to integrate. We have the only product, and I can beat my own drum.
Well, I was going to ask you how Revo was doing anyway, so you might as well go there.
It's doing phenomenal. We had an incredible 2-week seminars to something like 300 dealers, well, more than that, from Origin Acoustics that came and we gave them motivational speeches and talks. And we found out the same thing from everybody. We don't want to do home theater because we don't know how to do it. People like John Shack and Dennis can do it because it's the know. But the average young integrator and they're the majority, don't touch it because they're not there. So it's a matter of education. And Jeremy and I are joining forces to show integrators that it's easy, effortless, and it can be predictable and it can be profitable if they buy a car where everything is pre-configured by somebody else, by an engineer. The chassis, the wheels, the engine, and they just sell it. They don't have to fret how to isolate the room, what treatments to put, where to put the speakers, how to put the seats, what's the relations between seat and screen, the distance, all of these things that are daunting, but it's our bread and butter because we do it, but it's not for the integrator. So to me, the opportunity of working with a company like Origin Acoustics that has a very broad distribution network with hundreds and hundreds of dealers is an opportunity to spread the germ of the joy of home theater so that we can see it coming back if the client has the money and the space. It's not for everybody. You have to have the space and you have a certain budget. The theaters at Origins cost anywhere from 58,000 to 100,000, but that's complete, which means that they cannot go to every home.
You are able to accommodate relatively small rooms, right?
How about 10 by 12?
Dennis, where does that fit in the scale for you?
That's quite a bit smaller than my main media room, which is about 13 by 17.
13 by 17 is a luxury size for us. Wow. But what do you do to an empty nester's bedroom where the boy lives to go to college and you get stuck with a room that you don't have anything to do? You put the theater.
Yep. Excuse me. Before we go to a break, Dennis, was there anything else you wanted to ask Theo?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well, at least from my point of view.
So, all right, let's take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. Okay, so we are back and we're going to do what we've been doing lately at the end and just quickly check in on what everybody's watched or listened to over the past couple of weeks. Theo, have you seen anything that you thought was particularly interesting?
In the movies?
Movies, TV, anything you've streamed or listened to, any plays you've seen?
Oh my God, if I tell you what I saw recently, I saw Casablanca. Oh no, All About TV without sound because I didn't have on the plane. That's what I've watched. Wow. I knew that I don't watch very often. I saw in the theater a couple of movies. I don't remember what I saw. I saw Welcome to My Mate One. What do you call that?
Marwan.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I didn't know what else I saw. I just go to streaming. I don't bother to get this. When I buy a disc because archivally I want to keep it, it usually comes with a digital copy. So I download the copy or the number on the access code, whatever you call it, on my iPhone or my computer. So I register to Vudu and I'll be able to watch online. So unfortunately, even movies that I have Blu-ray, unless I buy them from Kaleidoscape, I watch the streaming copy.
I was just going to say, can you see yourself abandoning discs at some point?
I have already abandoned them about 90%.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to find someone to donate my library of laser discs. 3,000 of them. I don't even want to keep them anymore because I've been a rat pack, and now that I'm changing houses, I want to free up myself for all the baggage that don't have pure experience. And this is a result of being able to have it available streaming. I would never lose my LaserDisc collection if I didn't know that I can see whatever I want streaming. Now that I can, all this is excess baggage.
Right. Hey, Dennis, how about you? Last week or so, what have you seen?
I finished watching Love, Death, and Robots, which I wrote about for the site. Actually, though, I've been spending a lot more time with this fascinating YouTube channel that I found called Monarch's Factory. It's this Australian woman named Dale Kingsmill who basically just delves into, deconstructs, and retells myths, Greek myths, Norse myths, you know, folklore, and just explains the connections between them in a really compelling way. And I find it utterly fascinating. So
so this is just a straight presentation, no audiovisual aids?
No, it's her in front of her bookshelves, you know, with the camera on her. Just, I mean, sometimes there's cute little animation or whatever, but for the most part, it's just her deconstructing and retelling and explaining and detailing the connections between all of the myths that we think we know and understand, but I'm learning we really don't. So,
yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, do you have a quick Critical Role update?
Critical Role. The as of last night, the Kickstarter has passed its final stretch goal of 8.8 million. Still climbing, 2 weeks to go, but yeah, it's pretty amazing. So we're going to get basically an entire series now, an entire animated series, and I'm super excited about that. It looks like it's still looking like it's going to end up in the top five Kickstarters of all time. So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I do want to come back to that soon. I'm hoping to get Andrew back on and talk about new forms of content creation because there's a lot to talk about there.
Absolutely.
Okay. Theo, any further thoughts before we sign off?
It's an evolving subject. I tell you, everything I say this week, next week, something happens and I'm having a slightly different position. It's fantastic because it's an ongoing dialogue. We never know what's going to happen with movie attendance, watching things at home constantly becomes much more relevant because of the availability of content. So we're enjoying this volatile moment where something is happening, where content makes watching movies at home much more rewarding than ever before.
Yeah, I just thought of something really quickly. Since you are changing residences, what kind of setup do you anticipate having at your new place?
A better one than I have now, if I can help it.
That doesn't necessarily mean a bigger screen, though, right?
No, because the space is not. But the bigger screen, if you have a small room and you have the screen wall to wall, it does the same thing. It engages your peripheral vision. But I don't know. That's why I have to buy a house, but I cannot buy a house anymore around New York, an apartment that's not going to fit the theater. So I'm looking at areas, New Jersey, Westchester, so I can have a basement and have my theater, because I'm taking my theater with me. I'm taking the speakers, the amplifiers. Believe it or not, the guys that bought my apartment don't want anything to do with the theater. You remember Dennis? He told me about someone else that bought the theater. They're tearing my theater down because they want to put the pet zoo there or something like that.
I told you.
You told me. Now I'm eating my words. So I said, okay, you take the theater, I take all the equipment with me, of course, I will.
That feels like a form of desecration, you know?
It is what it is. You can be what everybody else is, and they can be what you are.
Oh, wow. Well, on that sad note, I think we're going to wrap things up.
Thank you, guys. That was very educational. And let's do it again soon. Next week, we'll talk about something else.
Okay, great. Thanks, Theo.
Okay. Thanks.
Oh, hush, Bruno. He wants to say goodbye, too.
Bye.
Okay, see everybody soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.